Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the China Shop from China Shop Productions. Dude. We're here to discuss finance this week. Yeah, first up this week, we're going to talk about the S&P 500.
What? Oh my gosh, that's staying in.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know.
I was in college, I played a character,
Steve Urkel,
multiple times.
He played a character.
Yeah. For 4 years. He was deep into it.
He was called the pencil salesman, and he was a nerd that could fight, bro. It's pretty slick.
That's right.
All right.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you just fine, buddy.
Okay, and that's all. I won't say anything else.
All right.
Can we do the introduction to the show now? I've got Nut Creek as well. But it's not time for shout-outs yet. Dude, let the guy introduce the goddamn podcast.
I'm Kyle, in case you've all forgotten. Got Vanta Trading's Baba Yaga, an honorary CEO of China Shop Productions, Flary, here with us. I think we're probably just going to spend some time catching up. We'll do our best to dissect a topic we got suggested to us by Bees from the Discord, how to stop the cycles of good and bad stretches. And if you guys want, just throw in some good, bad, and ugly there, as is tradition. Now, go ahead, promote your Knob Creek, buddy.
Oh, God, now he's muted.
I know. Yeah, he's doing it on purpose, isn't he?
Oh, man, is it not? It's so good to be back. Hey.
Wow.
In all seriousness, I had a birthday.
Yeah?
Not a big one, but this past last Wednesday or something, Thursday, I can't remember.
Laura just had her birthday, too.
What's her birth date?
Dude, I kind of feel bad now.
September 8th.
So mine's the 11th. My good friend from college is the 10th, and another good friend from college is the 12th.
So what happened? What happened? You guys are New Year's babies, right?
Yeah, that's when we were conceived.
Yeah. All right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. But check it out. And one of my good friends brought me a gift, a nice bottle of Knob Creek Single Barrel Select. It was a store pick. It's really good stuff. So appreciate that.
Is Knob Creek good whiskey?
It's just good. I mean, yes, you can spend, you can buy something expensive. I think it's like a $50 or $60 bottle. It's nothing to like post online or something, but it's good.
It's not something you're going to.
I'm going to drink it.
The whole thing?
It's fabulous, dude. Don't listen to him.
Is it a sipping whiskey or is it a I'm going to get fucked up tonight whiskey?
No,
no ice cubes.
No, there's no ice cubes in it. Yeah, and there's not ever a reason to drink a ton of it, period. Who wants to be plastered on whiskey? That's tough.
Yeah, well, it's the waking up from it that I don't like.
Flary just looked and said, eh, well.
What about you, Flary? What do you got going on, bud?
Well, I mean, I was working on a sponsorship from Knob Creek until Bob started shitting on him.
I'm drinking it. I think it's great, dude. Look, it's wonderful.
No, man, I don't know. Busy and got my, working in a bunch of different little things here. But yeah, it's just been a busy couple weeks and got a charity event for a local nonprofit tomorrow. So I was grinding in the kitchen, helping out with some stuff earlier today. Doing a Gelber trading contest.
Well, don't spend too much time, Todd, because that's going to be our first topic tonight.
Oh, well, okay. Well, fire away then, I guess. I don't. You know me. Yeah. Listen, you always do it for me, but listen to the guys at Rare Barrel and Rare Tequila or whatever their other channel is called.
Yeah, if you want something better than Knob Creek.
This is what happens back, when guys. You take fucking welcome 3 weeks back. Off, dude.
No.
Dude, I was trying to host Rogue Podcast. Nobody would join me.
Is that what happened? I set you up with a password and login.
Yeah, Baba literally ghosted me for charting.
Yeah.
That is a lie.
No, it is not.
Ghosted? I just said we're gonna have to do it later. I'm watching a movie.
I was practicing my intros and everything.
What were they? Were they gonna be cool like the one I did earlier?
No, they would be much better. Rehearsed.
He said no.
I would have shown up maybe like on time, you know, like those kind of things.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
I think we all know Baba is 9:05 start time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So for us, Boston Blockchain, we went and did a 10 episode podcast that we just finished recording for that. Actually, 11 episodes we ended up getting, trying to convince them to let us do it for longer. We met some fucking awesome people out there too. These guys with Circular Labs that we're supposed to be having another follow up with. Not quite sure what the guy wants to do with us because he's kind of talked about a lot of different things, but maybe we'll have some more stuff coming up out of that. But yeah, a lot of really cool stuff happening for us. Hopefully get another paying job to Boston here in the next couple months too.
That's awesome, man. Congrats.
Yeah who'd have thought?
Like low-key shit coins I'm supposed to buy?
Well,
something, anything, any crypto?
So that's actually what I wanted to ask you about, how you got into crypto, because... Like the stuff that this was less focused on crypto and more on like blockchain and like the applications of that technology. So we had people like coming in from the medical profession talking about how you can keep patients' records secure using this tech. And everyone has a coin for all their projects, but the coin isn't really the focus of the conversation, which I imagine probably takes some of the shine off for someone like you.
All right. So I got into crypto through like YouTube documentaries, which is so weird. Like this was like early whatever. Like I used to like try to find like weird documentaries, whatever. I used to just like that was like my go to bed, like listen to documentaries, whatever.
Yeah.
And I found one on this guy who was a Bitcoin miner. And I was like, dude, it's only a couple $100. Let's just buy a bunch. And what's the worst that could happen? And then I went, you know, I put together my pitch to the wife. Well, she wasn't the wife at the time, but whatever. I was like, you know, I've got some money. You've got some money. Let's buy some Bitcoin. Let's see what happens. So what was supposed to be like a $10,000 investment turned out to be like a $2,000 investment, which turned out very nicely. But right. It was not buy a house money. But yeah, it was like a documentary about miners. And the guy was like celebrating it going to, you know, $100 for the first time ever. And, you know, I went on the internet and tried to figure out how to do it. But that was literally how I got into trading too, was
right.
I bought Bitcoin. And then I was like, okay, I want to sell it. But I don't want to just like sell it on Coinbase or whatever the hell, you know, it was at the time. I forget what I had. But so then I was like, okay, there's exchanges, Poloniex. I mean, dude, like old school, like Madecoin, all these like crazy, like this was before shitcoins. Like there was just like altcoins right. And then there was Bitcoin and Ethereum. But like once I saw an exchange for the first time and saw like the buy and sell orders coming in, and like this was before like you didn't have to VPN into BitMEX. You could trade on leverage. Like it was just like, whoa, okay, I need to be a part of this. But yeah, it was all through some documentary. And that guy, he actually had a follow-up documentary. Dude made a ton of money. Like,
what was the documentary? I kind of want to check it out now.
I'll find it and send it to you. It was like a guy, it was like, you know, whatever. They were following around like a Bitcoin miner. And then one of the guys was like, you know, Bitcoin Jesus or whatever. They were like, you know, he was out there, you know, pushing it. One guy was trying to start like a live Bitcoin exchange in New York where you could go like an open outcry exchange. And it failed or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, the whole point is the price was like a few hundred dollars and now it's, you know, whatever, 63.
So what'd you sell it at?
4K. And it was because I was panicking because it was up so much. And I was like, there's no fucking way this thing goes up more than 4K. So I sold it. I sold it into like ETH because I thought it would be like more stable. And then that was moving around. So then I got into some, you know, whatever it was at the time, like USDC or something. And then it went to 20K.
Nice.
Yeah. So whatever.
No, you got some of it.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, dude, it was funny. Like this was back when, like, I forget, like there was a coin Neo. I jumped in Neo and like 15 minutes later, it went up like 50%. Like it was like the, you know, 2017 when it was, you know, there's a lot of people coming into it was when it really just like went crazy. And I was like, oh, this can't get any crazier than this. And here we are, you know,
30 Matt Damon from that, later.
Yeah. You
know. Yeah.
But it was good.
All right, dude, tell me about this, the competition that you're in. How you doing in it? I think you're in week two now, right?
Week two just ended. We are in second place.
Tell us about the competition first.
Yeah. Okay. So the competition is called The Breakout. They have a Twitter handle. Let's see what it's called here. It's called at Gelber Breakout on Twitter. Gelber? They don't post very much. Gelber, G-E-L-B-E-R, Breakout.
Okay.
Anyways, you know, we've talked about it kind of like vaguely a little bit on this podcast, but like was in some conversations with some of the team over at Gelber over the last little bit. It was suggested to, you know, check out this competition and checked out the competition. And it was an application process. You had to submit your process. You had to give a little bit about yourself. And the whole premise was that it was going to be a multiple week competition. Winner gets, I think it's like $25,000 or $30,000. There's money up top.
Okay.
And there's also a job, you know, at Gelber. So a discretional futures trading job. Yeah. So applied, got through the application process and got welcomed into, you know, what was eventually 30 traders that are in this competition. It's a blind P&L. So we don't know where other traders are at. So I'm in second place currently after 2 weeks.
But you don't know anything other than that.
But I don't know. I mean, I know my P&L. I don't know, you know, first place P&L or whatever, so on and so forth. So that there's kind of some interesting game theory stuff going on there. But the really cool thing was this, and I'll say this about the competition, the team at Gelber's done a really good job putting this together, is it's a competition and there's prize money, but in my opinion, it's a competition. It's an interview, disguised as a competition. Right. And so, you know, their, I think, objective is to see if the retail sort of sector that's out there on FinTwit or wherever is a potential source for new hires into their business. And, you know, the typical avenues for bringing people into their business might be, you know, finance school grads and things like that, you know, MIT, stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, again, I'm sure there's plenty of resources from that avenue, but I think they're interested in seeing if potentially the talent and the push and the expansion in the FinTwit sort of community of retail futures traders has some folks that have enough edge to potentially get a seat on their desk or at least like something worth like looking at. Maybe they can work with a trader or something like that. So anyways, it's, you know, again, an interview sort of disguised as a contest. But the really cool part was, you know, and you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but in all transparency, I sat down, I looked at the rules. They told us what it was. Basically, you're getting $20,000 a day of daily drawdown, which is insane. You know, you don't have access to micros contracts. You can do all kinds of crazy spreads and whatever, but for the most part, you're trading like future Forex markets or futures markets. And, you know, you can create your own spreads and stuff like that. You trade in TT, which is a whole nother conversation. So I'm in there like full Axia style dark mode DOMs. It's a whole thing, but it's interesting. So when they said the rules, you know, I think you guys know me, I'm very game theory, like poker sort of mindset. I looked at it and go, okay, listen, there's a bunch of money up top. Like if they give me $20,000, here's the best way to win the game. And you start thinking about it that way. And, we had sort of a pre-meeting before the competition started, and actually Brian Gelber was on the call, who is, you know,
Are you doing this with everybody else, or are you doing this one-on-one?
With everybody else. So it was a group of everyone who decided to join the call. You know, so we're on this call. It's a meet and greet call. There's, I mean, multiple seven-figure traders, heads of Chicago desk, heads of New York desk, traders, discretional traders on their desk. Like, their team is invested in this. It's really cool. Brian Gelber himself was on the call. I mean, literally in Market Wizards, like one of the greatest traders of all time. And
does he want to join us one of these nights?
I mean, I'll work on it.
Maybe ask him next time he does a meeting.
I really will. I'll work on it and see if I can get some of the guys in. I won't name drop them because I don't know if it's okay yet, but I'll work on it. And but anyways, it was funny. So, like, you know, again, I'm approaching this from a game theory perspective. I get $20,000. Here's what I'm going to do. And here's how I'm going to win this competition in a most game theory way. Brian Gelber literally comes on and in his sort of like speech amongst many other speeches or like sort of like there were like mini TEDx's. It was amazing for like anyone to like get a peek behind the like, you know, the curtain of pro trading. Brian Gelber comes on and he literally said, and it, dude, it was like, he was like, listen, I get it. There's a bunch of money up top and you can come in and do, he literally called it, you can be game theory about this and find a way to win because you'll get the most P&L. But at the end of the day, that dollar amount for the prize is insignificant to what you can win if you show us that you have process, discipline, and an edge in the markets and show some of the things that we're looking for. And it's funny because, you know, I was talking with Macro about it, who's also in the competition. You know, and I was just like, wow, instantly. I was like, okay, so this is something different.
It's not a competition. That is an interview, just like you
it's
said.
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, I had to shift my mindset a little bit about it, you know, and it's been very helpful for that piece too. And I'm glad that he came out and said that because I probably would have taken a different stance about it. And, you know, it's been...
Well, we talked a lot about the poker angle from things, and this was making me think this is like the difference of sitting in a cash game versus sitting in a poker tournament. Like, you have different mentalities with how you manage your stack in those different scenarios. But it sounds like you just went back to the cash game mentality.
Very much so. You know, I want to show that I have process, want to show that I have discipline, want to show that I have edge, resilience on down days, you know, ways to manage risk, that I can, you know, be trusted with this amount of money. How am I going to allocate the $20,000 a day versus, you know, the game theory version of it, which probably looks nothing like that. So, you know, again, a very interesting dynamic, a big learning curve with TT and some, I mean, like some eye-opening stuff with learning TT, which is trading technologies. If anybody doesn't know TT, go watch like some old Axia videos. It's pretty much like the execution platform that almost all major firms use.
That the one that two-year flipper was talking about all the time?
Yep. Yeah, he executes on TT. Yeah. So, okay. So here's like one big aha, which I feel comfortable sharing because it's not too much edge. I think other people in the competition probably have figured this out, but, and maybe this is just a me thing, but when I execute in Sierra, predominantly I can deploy a multi-target bracket with dynamic stops, trailing stops, whatever. I have different brackets for different markets, but I can market into the market in NQ specifically. I can market in and deploy a bracket. In TT, which is the most advanced trading execution platform used by all major firms, there is no such thing as a market order to deploy a bracket. Huh. It doesn't exist. And so I was asking the question, I mean, they gave us access to the TT help desk and like we've had WebEx calls or whatever they call it, Zoom calls with the TT, you know, support team. And I'm asking them this question. They're like, yeah, it doesn't exist. And no one's asked to make it. And clearly they could make it in, you know, minutes.
Does that scare you, though, that nobody's asked for that?
I mean, that is the most eye-opening piece of edge that I think I've discovered like inadvertently in this is that, as far as I'm concerned, most retail traders that I know probably deploy some version of a market order with a bracket. And the most advanced order type, order execution platform used by major firms, it doesn't even exist because it's just that big of a leak. So, you know, I mean, early on, I was like, wow. So, you know, that's been a big change for me because you have to learn to trust the price that you want and be very intentional about your entry, your out, trusting your discipline for the out. If you get an entry without deploying a bracket, you have to get your entry, attach orders, OCOs, you have to go and put your outs in. And it's intentionalness and it's intentional to a point that I'm you know, really honestly not used to. And I've had some learning curve errors with it and, you know, just learning a new platform on top of, you know, trying to compete against a bunch of guys who are killers has been tough. But yeah, I mean, eye opening that there's no such thing as a market order with brackets.
Like, probably you still use market orders, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been using them, but now it's making me think maybe I need to rethink that.
Yeah. So you're saying if you put a limit order on, you can already have brackets in place when that fires? Or are you saying no matter what type of order you place?
No, only limit orders.
Okay, gotcha.
So if I pick a price, if I want to sell 2079, which was a great price to sell today, you have to click a limit order. And then that limit order will deploy what TT calls an OTA, which is like an order ticket algo. Mm-hmm. And it will deploy that. But if I mark it in, you just mark it in. So the only reason there's a market button in this platform is for scratching. Absolute emergency, chasing, whatever it is. Otherwise, you know, there's intention behind entries and exits, which, you know, not saying that I don't have intention behind my entries and exits, but to see something happen, whether it's in the order flow, whether it's you know, price action at a price that you're already watching or whatever, it's now I see it and now I know where I want to do business. I enter my order and then my order will either deploy a bracket or more than likely what I've learned is that you are entering at that price. And then, you know, if it happens to rip through where you think your exit is, like you're sized correctly so that you can liquidate the position using, you know, a liquidate button or a flatten button, whatever they call it, liquidate button, if you need to. But in theory, you know, like you're correct enough where you can go and you can put in a stop, you can go put your OCO orders in and your intentional exits. And it's food for thought that this is how professional traders in this space are executing. And, you know, again, I wasn't previously. So
like, to me, that just goes to speak to how important it is to be okay with missing a trade, right?
How important it is to let the trade come to you, right? To these guys, that it's so important that no one's even thought to ask them to just create something that they could create super easily. I mean, like, honestly, it's in every platform that I've ever used from a retail perspective. And I've used all of them, Ninja and Motive and Sierra, whatever. You can deploy a market order with multiple take profit brackets, blah, blah, blah. So
are there any other major differences you've noticed between the two platforms?
Yeah, it doesn't lag.
I blame Rhythmic for that.
I mean, even Teton at times, you know, has some moments of down, but I mean, this thing, I was watching it during FOMC and it was, it's unbelievable how on point it is. But
yeah,
it's been a really cool experience, access to guys that, you know, I feel like in the very beginning of trading, I always thought if I could just get a look over the shoulder of somebody who I know is at this tier and a peek into their mind of what kind of things are important to them, it would be sort of that aha moment for me. And I'm getting a bunch of that right now. And, you know, these guys, they're not supposed to be coaches and mentors, and they're not in there giving you, you know, advice on how you should manage your trades or not manage your trades or like what trades you should take. But at the end of each day, we do have to do a trade recap and we do get feedback on those. And it really has been sort of a little bit of that, like, you know, not quite standing over the shoulder of a seven-figure trader, but like getting some insight into it.
You're getting to present your work to one of them, and that's kind of it's intimidating on one end, but it's also validating on the other, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, make some money, maybe get a job, maybe have access to some guys that are doing this very seriously for a very long time at a major firm under one of the greatest traders to ever, you know, put an order in the market. Certainly. So at the very least, it's an opportunity for growth, and it's already been very eye-opening. Had some big down days. The day before FOMC was, I hit my max loss. I probably shouldn't say that because then people will have an idea where I was at. But I misclicked in TT, and TT is a whole thing. Anyways, I misclicked in TT, and you know, it was one of those things where I was trying to short and I ended up long on a misclick, and I was like, oh no, now it's a long. Convinced myself that I could, one, trade out of it as it's going against me, and two, that like the long was now correct, and, you know, managed to just like have just an off day. But the interesting thing is, like, in this environment, one of the pieces of feedback I got was like, you know, your job, if you come work at a firm like this, is to apply risk into the market. You're given a certain amount of risk and your job is to apply that risk. And if you, you know, use it and you take a loss, you still have to come back the next day and in theory, apply that risk. Now, you know, I came to the desk tired and some other things, and I probably shouldn't have been executing the way that I did. But nonetheless, like, I had to come back the next day, which was FOMC, and, you know, try to have a decent day, and was able to do that. And, you know, it's just been through all the stuff, it's just been like, okay, there's some really core things short of just having setups and short of having edge that these guys are doing that make them elite. And a lot of it is you stuff. Like, we talk a lot about that on this podcast and things like that. But like, it really is like these guys, the level of discipline and the level of attention to their setups and only caring about their setups is, you know, sort of the aha. It's the it factor that that they bring to the table.
Reminds me, we need to follow up with 2-year flipper. We got to reschedule that other interview we're going to do with him. Also, let me know when this thing wraps up, because I'd love to just spend an hour picking your brain on the whole process. Maybe we could talk through some of the key learnings that you had over the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there will be some. I mean, maybe there's an opportunity. I'll reach out to some of the guys, and maybe some of the guys would be willing to come in and, you know, share their experience. Maybe some of the guys from Gelber will, I don't know, but I can certainly ask and we can find out. But
yeah, please do, man. That'd be awesome.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right. I think that kind of actually what you just talked about, that little mini cycle there, you know, having to perform after taking a big drawdown, that kind of leads into Beez's question or topic that he suggested for us, which was stopping the cycle of trading well, good mindset, being content with enough, and then going full degen mode and downward spiraling until find the bottom again. Baba, that's one thing that you talk about a lot. Like, after you have a really good day, like, size down, maybe take the day off, let yourself kind of come to grips with what just happened, because those tend to be the days that lead to outsized losses. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that whole thing?
The question is,
like, how do you more stop specifically, the cycle?
You stop. Just stop. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Okay. All right. Got it. All right.
I mean,
shut it down.
Not so much. Like, so much of what we have talked about on here, and I feel like we've talked a lot about this idea. I think it's a collection of things. I always go to, like, there's always, like, precursors to, you know, everything coming undone.
Right. Nothing happens just out of the blue. Yeah. Yeah.
Very rarely is it like, here I am having a great day.
I think I'm just going to light $1,000 on fire.
Let me just burn it all to the ground. So long, $5,000, right? Like, yeah. in one moment, right? There's usually a trade or a series of trades that are proving to you that you're on the wrong side of what's happening. And then you have a decision to make. And I think there's, like, that's where there's an evaluation. Like, are you stable enough and, like, still have enough mental capital and you're still in the game enough to continue to trade? And this is before, like, you know, this is just, say, like, a couple of normal losses, right?
Yep.
But they start to, like, add up because your mind starts to go towards that get back mentality. And then that can just snowball, right? And there are going to be, like, mental things, like things that you think, ways that you feel, and then things that you do that lead to that cycle of a little bit bigger size, stop, a little bit bigger size, stop, bigger size, bigger stop, max position size, no stop. They either take me or I get paid. That's like the tiers of degradation of your ability to make good, prudent decisions. That's the way it's always gone for me, at least. And a lot of the traders that we've done all these evals with echo the same thing. And they almost say, like, it's almost surprising. Like, how did you know?
Yeah,
how did you know that's how that goes? It's like, because it's actually not a special, it's not a specially unique problem or a specially unique hurdle to get over. So I think that would be the first side of the thing that I would kind of tell or encourage someone to, like, think about or write some about, is like, what are those thoughts or what are those physical postures or things that you start to do that precede the unwind? And then just be really aware of those. And I think there does come a point in all of that where you have to exercise some measure of, like, self-mastery or self-awareness to not just know that that's what is starting to happen, but have the capacity to then stop.
You talked about it being like a cycle. Like, you've identified the cycle very well, it sounds like. The way you identified each of those steps, like, oh, here I take a stop, and then I size up one contract, and then I take another stop, and then I see. You've got it all stepped out like that. If you can define the cycle of your meltdown, I feel like that puts you in a much better position to be able to identify it in the moment and put a stop to it, because that's really the only way you're ever going to stop the cycles is to recognize when you're in one of them, right?
Yes, 100%. The other thing is, like, I think this part could be different for everybody. Mm-hmm. But for me, I don't really like, I definitely have come to grips with this now. There was a point where I could not stomach having a red day. Like, I didn't like to finish the day down P&L from where I was the prior day. I just would sometimes trade my way from just a small red day. I mean, less than, you know, what, like two or three trades worth of stops. And that would, like, light the fuse. And then in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't want to end the day down that much. Say it was $450, say that. Let's use that as an example. I don't want to end the day down $450. Well, I can oversize in one trade, and if I get TP2 off, then I'm fine. I'm like, I'll be green, stop to break even, maybe it runs, right? Well, like, then that stop hits, and now you've taken, let's say that was a 2R position. So now you're, like, in the 700-800 range. Now you're down 2 days, or, you know, 6R. And then you're like, okay, man, I really don't want to finish the day down. I don't even want to finish the day down that much. Now I really don't want to finish it down that much. And then that's when the colossal, that's when the foundation crumbles. then it's almost, I would say this is where people have to really do some man in the mirror stuff, because there's almost, I found that there's almost a relief, like, well, now it's over. Someone else ended the game for me, either my broker or my funded account is now blown, or my challenge, whatever combine or whatever tryout is now blown. Someone else took control. The Max Loss took control, you know, that's programmed into whatever account. And that willingness to relinquish your own self-control to the mechanical controls of the account based on the total loss is like a massive, it's a bail moment. Like, it's just bailing yourself out. Mm-hmm. It's like quitting. It's effectively quitting. And then there's this reprieve, because then you're like, well, if it's one of the challenge accounts, you can just go buy another one. If it's a funded account, you start the whole process over. If it's your broker, now I've got a month I need to save some money back up to start another account. If you literally lit your cash account on fire, which would be kind of crazy, but right. I mean, I'm sure it's happened, right? So I think that side of it too is just really important. Like, at a certain point, the pain of finishing a day red or the frustration of that, you know, falls into kind of takes control. And then it's just, I just don't want this to be this way. So the only option is blow it all to smithereens or fix everything right now.
I feel like I'm finally starting to make some progress in there. Like, I didn't trade too much this week, but there was, I think it was Wednesday when I was jumped on with y'all for about 40 minutes or so. I think I took a couple quick stops and then I just thought, you know, I'm kind of fighting it. It's not really worth it. I'll go do something better with my time.
Yeah.
And I think the key there was being able to stop before that number got too big. And like you were talking about, and you've talked about many times, like once that number gets to a certain point, then that's when well, I've done this much damage now, might as well go ahead and finish it off.
Because, yeah, it's like a threshold almost, yeah, you know, it's like a tolerance thing. I think the thing that you said, Fleury, about a certain amount of risk every day to deploy, I think would be a much healthier way for everybody to think about that. So I'm not going in trying to see what happens. I'm going into the day knowing that for this account or for this day or for this market condition, I would actually like to put at risk $1,000.
Right.
In some way, I would like to get that in the game. This is an opportunity here. If I want to do that over the course of 4 trades, if I want to do that across the course of 2, whatever setup is there, and then deploy that in and look at it like it's like that is your, that's the opportunity is there for you to use that money and put it to work. Mm-hmm. It may turn out that goes to P&L and that's great. It may turn out that you actually have to have that expense for your business that day. And, you know, you have to go on to the next, but if it's defined and you've planned it out and you know, kind of some of your hit rate and strike rate and all that, in theory, you just, then the next day you're right back. Like you were mentioning, dude. And I think, it's a big piece of the puzzle or a big piece of the pie is, you know, intentionally deciding that this is going to be put to work. I'm not holding this with white knuckles in hopes that I don't lose anything. It's just a different mindset.
You're already comfortable losing that money's already gone.
Well, becomes, I mean,
almost, right?
It becomes a realization though of like, so you get caught in this boom bust cycle that I'm sorry, I forget who mentioned the
bees.
Bees. You know, he mentioned the cycle, right? And the cycle is real. I'm not denying that the cycle is real. Ask me how I know. Like, it's very much a thing that happens, right? I'm a glass slipper guy too. Like, I think I'm on, I don't even know. It's like, let's see. It's like the fact that I don't want to look to see how many green days in a row it is. Like, it just shows that I'm still cognizant. Like, I'm scared of that piece of it. But that cycle is a real thing that retail traders deal with, is like, it's been going good for so long. The question is, was it going good because of good things, or was it going good because of, you know, different risks and things that you're taking? But at the end of the day, the way you get out of the cycle and that you avoid even the existence of the cycle is what Bob is talking about, is getting into the mindset of, and this was a recommendation, you know, after I had a bad day, was getting into the mindset of a playbook. And these moments that you're putting risk into the market, they should be so well thought out that it doesn't become this possibility for you know, this ultimate blow up moment after a bunch of great moments. It just becomes the next opportunity to deploy risk. And you're deploying that risk with a systematic exit, a systematic sizing, a systematic you know, outs, whether it's your stop or your actual take profits, and the setup and the dynamics of the setup. And if you are approaching the markets from that standpoint, the boom bust cycle is just a matter of whether or not you actually have edge. And at least there's a good feedback loop. So what we're really talking about here is the discipline to follow, or the absolute lack of having some version of a systematic way to deploy your risk. And like, one of the big things that's like really been an aha for me, like coming from this look behind the curtain of professional traders, is that it's not about the next winning and losing trade. Like, it's not, I want this trade to be a winning trade. It's literally about whether or not you are going to deploy risk in your given setup, and not caring about the result of the trade. Your job is to execute some amount of systematic risk when you see your setup. If you're not inside of your setup and it's not, you know, A plus, then you don't size this way. If it's B, you size this way. And at the end of all that experience, if you have a blow up, it becomes, did you or did you not follow your risk profiles? Did you or did you not follow your playbook? And if you did and it just didn't work, then it just didn't work. And you should never be in a spot where, in theory, you have these blow up days. Because like Baba was saying, there's these tiers to like bad decision making, where you ultimately get to like the fuck it's, like let the market decide, where you're just literally at the mercy of chance, right? Like, I'm in and they either do it or they don't, right? It's the fuck it moment, right? Yeah. And I think we've all been there, and it is a reality, like it's a thing, but that cycle exists because of the lack of other things. And I think that's the key metric there, is that like the real mirror moment is that you need to go back and look at, what is your playbook? What is your process? And is it defined enough so that these types of things don't happen? And if they do, it's a direct result of you deviating from what you said you were going to do. So if you took a 5R stop and your process says that your out is like max, you know, 2R, and you sized accordingly, and then you just didn't respect your out, the problem is your lack of discipline inside of the playbook that you've built and the setups that you've put towards the market. And in theory, the boom bust cycle sort of ends, because the wins aren't a result of gambling and the losses aren't a result of, you know, sort of like a bad coin flip. The wins are because you executed inside of your process and it just happened to work. And the losses are mitigated because it's just, you're not going to win every time. And the more I hang out in these streets, man, the more I realize that that's what it really comes down to, is having some version of a system of your deployment of risk that makes survival possible. And you actually get to progress more when you figure out when you're doing well in certain environments and when you're not, and whether or not your strategy actually works. And again, like I talk a lot about the feedback loop, like you don't get good feedback if you're constantly putting a shit, you know, system together, right? Or you're not respecting right. your work. And I think that's like a big piece that you know, this sort of thing all comes down to is, you know, are you respecting what you said you were going to do or not? And if you have something and you're not respecting it, it's a discipline issue. If you don't have a process, like it's a process issue, it's a setup, it's a playbook issue. And,
Larry, one of the things that I've been kind of digging into lately is stoicism. I got some books from Eric Smolensky that he sent me to. One of the big tenets in that is controlling what you can control. And that makes me think a lot about 2-year flipper and that very first episode we did with him. Remember when he was talking about his only job when he gets into a trade is to scratch it? Like, that's all he's focused on, is whether or not he's going to scratch out of this trade or it's going to hit. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a lot of what you're talking about is these traders, they know the things that they can control, and that's the only thing that they're focused on. I can't control if it's going to hit my take profit, but I damn sure can control if I get out when I say I'm going to.
You can
to.
Control your outs. Yep. Yeah. And it becomes a discipline game. And, you know, again, the it factor is you, and if you don't have it, you know, you need to work on that piece of it. And you know, if it's a discipline issue, but you have the playbook, you have the setups, it's a discipline issue. You work on your discipline and you figure out how to put some guardrails on that or some stop losses on, you know, when you're making poor decisions versus, you know, you're in a good decision making mindset. But if you don't have the core of like, what is your defined playbook? What are your defined setups? You know, it's hard to make, you know, be well disciplined if you're just always licking your finger and putting it in the air. And
well, and if you're honest, you know that you're just,
oh, you know it. Always know when you're doing dumb shit. Like, and but that's how you get to that top tier of the levels that you were describing. It's like, you know, I've got a relatively loose playbook, and then, you know, I don't like taking losses, and I know that I'm not supposed to take, you know, more than 3 losses in my system because I don't want to have more than like 1 red day equal 3 average green days. And there you are on that red day that exceeds that, but you don't like to take it. And like, it really just becomes a matter of, are you the kind of person who's going to be really disciplined to the point where it's like, you know, again, one of the guys in this thing said to me, he's like, there's discipline, there's being able to describe your discipline, and then there's guys who are just like absolutely religious and actually can follow their discipline. And those guys can do things with risk that you wouldn't even imagine is possible. And I think that's true for a lot of us, is like, we know what the storybook version of discipline or our process is supposed to look like, but we don't actually have the skill set to follow it the way that we wish that we could. And I think that's like that ultimate strive. And, you know, I mean, it sucks because like, I know people that can do that like nothing. Like, they're just like, what do you mean you can't just eat a stop? And, oh, your daily loss is this and blah, blah. Like, that's like, it's not me. So, you know, that's like, I might have edge in other areas, but this is somewhere where I need to work harder and press harder into. But at the end of the day, like, the boom bust cycle really does come down to you, your ability to define your process, your setups, and what does discipline inside of this process mean? And if you're following all those things and still seeing losses, then at least you can go, okay, I need to go look at my setups and look at my process, or maybe redefine what my filters are for when I take some of these trades and things like that. But one of the things that I've done recently, I went back, there's a podcast, there's a book by Mike Belfiore. And it's funny because I watched this podcast, I read this book, and I read it probably like 4 years ago or something like that. And I'm obviously much better today than I am in a more defined process than I had, if any process at all, 4 years ago. That book was like really good then. I went back and started reading it just last week, and it's like, oh my gosh. I totally get what he's talking about now. And it's honestly, it's like a completely different book. It's like I read it as a toddler and now I'm reading it as an adult or something like that.
That was like, when I went back and listened to I think it was the second episode of, Trade Runners we did with Rich Friesen, and I was like, oh my God, how did I forget about all this? I need to go back and do this shit again. Yeah,
very much so. So, yeah. I mean, there's worth checking out or rereading the playbook by Mike Belfiore, or however he pronounces it. But
anything that you found value in, I think, is worth going back to, because I think we forget how much.
Dude, it's crazy, like the different ears or different eyes, however you want to look at it, that you can see things through, or the new lens that you have. But at the end of the day, like, proper operators are not looking at trading as a boom bust cycle, as a, my idea worked, I think it's long, therefore long, and my long worked, yay, I'm good. It's, my job is to deploy risk. Here's my system for deploying risk. Here's my entry criteria. Here's the filters that I use to determine that criteria. Here's where my out is. Here's where my exits are. And then you grade yourself on your ability to follow that plan and really grade how your playbook is doing. And the boom bust cycle comes from just the complete lack of having that. And it's like, it's almost like a reflex, right? Like, when you don't have that, your reflex is to go up the stair step of bad decision-making processes that happen. And I mean, dude, I'm decent at this thing. I'm certainly not like great, but I see what great people do and I've had some insight into it. And it's really crazy how you can be like, you can think you're here and one moment in the market can knock you back down to like, you know, a lower level. But I think, you know, again, like, by the grace of God, there go I, like, I can see myself coming a little bit more today, but I still do it. Like, I still have those those moments. And I think it's like in the beginning, it was, this is going to cost me my account. You know, I'm going to lose 20, 30 grand today. I'm going to lose X number of funded accounts today or whatever it is. And, you know, some version of it today is like, you know, I'm going to lose half of the account today or some, you know, like I'm going to lose more than I wanted to. And I think, you know, the future version is like, you know, you're just like taking your daily allotment of risk, like we were talking about, and you're just content with it. And you come back the next day and you just hit your A plus setup again, right? Like it becomes, your job is to deploy risk and you do it in a systematic way and you're either doing it or not. And that's what the guys who are at the top are doing. And it's just, what's your journey look like to get to that stage where you can trust yourself enough? And when you are making bad decisions, to not be at the desk or to step away or to just be okay with the loss or whatever that looks like, because it really isn't being okay with the loss. It's not, there's a dollar amount that you have to be okay with, but it's like, it's a systematic approach to how much risk you're willing to put into the market today. That's it. Like, your job is to take risk. And the more you simplify it, kind of like the weird, like easier it gets of like a complex, like mental game of like you versus you, just keep deploying risk, but do it in a disciplined manner. And you avoid these sort of blow up days, right? The blow ups come from moving the stops, come from being 5R when you're only supposed to be 1. And all of these things that you're just not supposed to do and that a professional would not do, but we do because we're trying to work through this thing. And it's hard. I get it. But
so if you want to get better, one of the things you really need to do is look at those bad days and those ugly days and those good days. So maybe we should take a moment to look at those ourselves.
Good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah. What do you say, Baba? You want to lead us off?
Yeah. Let's go.
Woo.
Woo.
Man, pep it up, buddy.
Woo.
I was just listening and just thinking so much there has my brain going. So this was a light week for me, actually, looking back through this. I don't know that there was anything especially awesome to like talk about from a win standpoint. Nothing that really stands out. FOMC day wasn't anything special. I think I don't even know that we I can't even remember. I'm looking at notes to see anything cool that stands out. I'd say the good is that I took this week as I was light last week because it was my birthday. I took this week careful because of FOMC and everything. And there was a lot of news all week. And so I would say there were a couple of good things late in the afternoon. So like on the six, I would say like I had a good trade Monday afternoon that was after everything was done. And that
Baba
was
always doing his best trades after he gets off stream.
Well, I can't help it. we basically made a big zigzag and blew out both sides and traded below a 4-hour swing low, came back in, gained a low time frame, moved to the low and bang, bang, she went. And that was actually the ignition for this whole thing. So I was long that move up, which is cool. I'm looking back through my screenshots to banks. So that was probably the good. It's like that was an easy trade. It kind of checked a lot of the boxes. I'll tell you this. So that was the good. The bad and the ugly were both today, and not from losing money, but literally, if you were on it with us, we talked about sweeping the swing high.
Yeah.
We talked about sweeping the swing high. So I was long for that move, scaled, thank God, came back down.
My mic wasn't working the whole time. I was telling you, like, I don't know that I like this as a long, Bob. This is looking like a pretty good short setup.
So we come back down. We're still holding the OR. We're still inside the first 50 minutes. I took another, I added to that trade because I scaled part of it, added to that trade, recycled part of that position, stopped out, wait a little while, still inside the first 15 minutes. Thought I'd give him one more shot to sweep a little higher on like a third size. Stopped out. All the while saying, one thing to watch for, since we blew this high out, is like we get a 15-minute OD open and drive range to the downside. You know, that would be a trade to take because we looked at the 4-hour, we looked at the 1-hour, and we were in, well, I actually used the term, we were in brownie batter land. Yeah. Like we don't have anything great to lean on for coming into the day. Is like this one spot in Globex is where we really need to bang from. There was nothing of substance on like an hourly or 4 hour time frame. So we're in squish land, which is where setups like an opening drive or a 30-second no tick can be the fuel to create the move. Ding, we set up a 15-minute drive. We trade right around or almost make it the trade fully set up. Literally talking about it, don't take it. Say this trade usually goes 2R. If it goes past 2R, 4R, we drew out the levels on the chart targeting this, and then watched it sail away, honey, all afternoon. And which I had an early lunch with my wife. We went to a lunch date. So, and I was kind of hesitant to trade because I didn't want to, I had a decent week. I didn't want to go to lunch pissed off, losing a bunch on a Friday. So I made some mental concessions, but looking back, that was a really easy setup. We could have probably everyone in Free Friday would have appreciated a little more forward communication about how clean that was. We should have all just piled into it.
I think you did a good job of talking it through, though. You went back and you showed the entire setup. Like,
yeah.
If anybody sees it again, hopefully they grab it.
Well, hell, I've seen it a lot of times, and yeah. I've grabbed it a lot of times, but I didn't. Right? I didn't today. So that was probably the bad and the ugly. It just felt like, man, I actually was looking back at it when Flair was talking, because I was like, not only does it check the 15-minute box, it also checks the hourly mid box for mm-hmm. the range. And Flair, you just nod your head more. Yeah, I can't quite feel the judgment as much as I should. It checked a lot of boxes.
I was in the trade, dude, so I know. They didn't make it easy, so I know the emotions of the trade.
But man, that was such a good move. You really traded down to where Mike was talking about. And then it was 11:15, so I was at lunch. So I didn't get back to see it till like after 12, but we tickled back below that balance area high. And then the way we made that low today and came back up out of it was so like
six blue fucking towers in a row. I mean, they came down and the boys stepped in. Whatever. Options market, whatever the whamma gamma bullshit is, like the boys,
they hit the tape
and they were off and running. And that's why they put a market button in TT, was for shit like that.
Right.
Yeah. And I actually came back. I said, maybe the good for the whole week was that I came back into Futures Talk on the shop side and was like, hey, if anybody's holding any short leftover from the morning or whatever, like looking at how this just went, like you should just be really, really careful of that. And then I didn't say this in there, but in a text between me, J-Mac, and Banks, they were messaging back and forth, and I was like, "We're gonna trade through this opening range today before the close." And I think we were trading at like 960s when I said that, and I said something like, "Look, just full market or full leverage long, no stop, take profit in the OR."
Oh man, I can't give away too much because it'll give value to what my P&L is, but I took that trade in my Gelber thing, and it's funny because we get put in these little pods. So like there's pods of 10, there's three pods, and my pod, let's see, this afternoon at 9:42 I said 19.964 is a magnet on the 1 hour turn. Sellers look to close the FOMC gap, but if buyers can recover, I would look for them to challenge the 20.72 seller again. Off my desk with good luck for the rest of the day. And I ripped that one. They went down there. And dude, I'm telling you, I was done for the day. But when you saw those guys light up the tape like that, I was like, dude, I'm in. Let's go. It was just one of those like chase moments. And they did it. Like they went for it.
It was fairly telegraphed, you know, the way that it all unfolded. I wasn't here for it, but
I don't know if I would call that an ugly, but it was a hell of, you know, it's ugly that you were having a beer while the move was happening, but hey, whatever.
Yeah.
It's good.
So Larry, I think we got your good and ugly out of that then, right? Because you had your max loss day the week you already talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I think my good.
I think that was your good, which you just.
Well, I mean, that was good. I could have executed it better, for sure. But like, I was literally on the way out the door, so I just took it as a scalp and left a piece. But my good is probably you know, again, like this shit's public in their Discord, so I don't really give a shit about talking about it. But I officially got a chunk from the old FTT boys.
Yeah.
You know, so hit him for a 33K payout and literally have another one like resting.
Ooh, nice, dude.
You know, so, you know, again, like we talked about them and like some of the cool shit they've done. And like, dude, there's edge there, boys. You want to figure it out. I know a lot of people that have not done well or had anywhere near some of the payouts I've seen. And I know a lot of people that are like multiple five figure, if not six figures into payouts with these guys. You know, whatever you want to call it, a gold rush. If it lasts, doesn't last. But man, I'll tell you what. We're in the streets. But yeah, so my good would be, you know, again, like waiting on approval, although there's no reason for it not to get approved of another 33K. Literally had 33K hit. And I'm like already working on another batch. So
nice, dude.
That's been really good. And, you know, I mean, you know, it's just nice to have somebody actually pay you when you do really well. I got Jack out of like north of that from Apex for some bullshit early January or something like that. But anyway, so that was good. And trading's just been good. You know, Glass Slipper, you know, we talked, dude, it's funny because I swear to God, we were on this podcast on a Friday after like another month long run or best month. And I had my worst day ever following that on a Monday. So, you know, try to avoid it.
Do you remember when I messaged you on, I think it was the third after the day, you completely forgotten. What happened the next day?
Oh, I had a great day. But then the next day, the next day I blew it up. But.
So we broke the month curse, though.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, the glass slipper thing. The boom bust cycle, like, it just is what it is. Ask me how I know. The good would be, you know, that was fun. You know, I haven't hit somebody that hard in a while and, you know, more to come. But I would say the bad was probably, like you were saying, you know, again, in this environment where I have to fucking write a write-up about like how I'm an absolute jackass and you're a seven-figure baller. And, you know, here I am, you know, rub my face in the carpet. I just pissed on it. Like, here we go. So, you know, it's just and I expect better from myself, from the amount of time I've put into this thing. And to have like to literally have to type something of like, I misclicked and I was meant to be short and I'm long. And then I convinced myself it was long and took a $20,000 stop. Like, you're literally just typing, I'm a jackass. Thanks for the opportunity. Like, what do you do? So that was bad. And I would say the ugly is I missed Baba's birthday. I didn't know it was Baba's birthday. I fucking feel bad. I put it in my calendar now, so I'm not going to miss it.
How could you forget? And also, well, you probably weren't in the room much, but I think we talked about it in there, but you weren't hanging out, so.
I know we posted. I posted something.
I'm sorry, dude.
I'm pissed. Friend. Can you tell how pissed I am?
I didn't really do a whole lot of trading, as we mentioned, but I did take some trades in my funded accounts this week.
Hey.
For the first time. So I made two days count because you got to get at least $200 to count a day. So I got one day in one account and one day in another account. The best one's up like 600. The other one's 250. Keeping it slow, reasonable. I think the bad was I took like one stop on UB that was two ticks. It shouldn't have been that much, but I felt pretty good because I scratched out of it rather than trying to be stupid and, you know, scratch from below or try to, you know, take one tick instead of two. I just ate it and then just moved on to the next account. But yeah, I actually making some progress towards finally getting a payout myself. So fingers crossed next week, hopefully.
Go. Got it.
All right, guys. Anything else before we wrap this thing up then?
Good to be back. Let's not take 4 weeks off again or whatever.
It's Kyle's fault, dude. Yeah, I tried to get you guys to record one while he was gone.
Dude. 12 hour days, man. I wasn't in the mood to record anything.
No. I'm excited to catch up on some of that stuff too, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, I posted some of the I posted the sneak peeks in the early access channel in the Discord if you're in there. Check it out. But I think that's gonna do it for today's episode. So thank you, Baba. Thank you, Flary, for jumping in today. Thank you, everybody else, sticking around to the end here. And thank you, Bees, for the awesome topic today.
Yep.
Can we give them access to Vonta for thank you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, tell them to, or you can do it. Give him a couple weeks in there. And If he's listening to this, or if he does listen to this, tell him to reach out. If he doesn't want to do an entire trader eval, if he hasn't done one, I don't think he has. If he wants to jump on just a call, like privately, you know, people have done that for me. Throughout the years, I'd be more than happy to give him some time, and I'm sure Banks would, or any, you know, you guys, or if he wants to do that via doing an eval, we can do it that way. It's a little more formal that way. It could be a little more casual the other way. But yeah, would totally be open to whatever. Yeah, hook him up with some time.
All right, and then anybody else wants that, you just go to Vonta Trading. I think you can find the links on the website.
Yeah, we can. You can. The last 2 weeks, I will say, just for everybody around the room, last 2 weeks have been a little more slim. Like, again, with my birthday being off, my wife having a car accident.
I've been gone.
There's been a lot of Kyle's been gone. Yeah. There's just been, like, back-to-back kind of, like, things that have demanded a lot of my attention, and I've not been as fully present as normal. But we're about to be back because all that's done, and FOMC's done. So let's freaking go.
And the Doves are back, baby. All right, fellas. Like, share, subscribe, all that shit. And see you next week. Peace.
Later.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.